BDSM and non-standard relationships.
Power exchange and polyamory.
Sacred sexuality and fetishes.
As well as simply fun kink. You'll find shows on these topics and more at eroticawakeningpodcast.com. This week on Erotic Awakening, conversations with Ian Snow from freedomandconstraint.com, BDSM, and mindful meditation.
Welcome to Erotic Awakening, an exploration of all things erotic. Your hosts, Dan and Dawn, share with you their experience and insights on kink, power exchange, and erotic life, as well as bring you interviews with exciting people from various lifestyles. Erotic Awakening is intended for mature audiences. If you are offended by adult topics or prohibited by law, we recommend you stop listening right now.
So you've gone back to reading that whole thing again.
I have. Why wouldn't I?
Because we were not reading that whole thing for a while.
There's nothing crossed out.
I know. It's not been crossed out. So there you go.
I have no clue which to not read.
Hi, Dawn.
Hi, Dan.
Today on the podcast, we're going to be speaking with Ian Snow. We talked to him for a little while ago, and we talked about using meditation to process pain, as well as mindfulness as a dom, and all other good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be about a 25-minute conversation, flowed real smoothly. Really neat conversation, a neat person.
It was. So I know he got me hot and bothered during part of it, so.
Well, that's not that hard a thing to do.
It's not.
So, since we can't fuck this up any longer, we'll go ahead and bring on Ian Snow, who's going to tell us all about Buddhism and about meditation and about processing pain and how to create freedom via constraint. So, Dawn, have you taken time to meditate yet today?
Today? No, but we found a nice place last night to meditate.
We did find a nice place to meditate last night. But what does meditation have to do with being kinky?
Ooh, I don't know that I can put that into words.
Fortunately for us here on the podcast tonight, we have Ian Snow, who is going to be able to put that and some of the connection between BDSM and meditation and Buddhism all in a good package for us. Ian, thanks for being on the podcast.
My pleasure. You guys are fun.
And should I start off should I be addressing you as Roshi or Reverend or Your Honor?
Ian's fine. I'm not any of those things. Just a longtime practitioner. I've been meditating for 25 years, teaching meditation for 12 years. I lived 4 years as a monk, but no, I'm not a reverend, not a Roshi.
But living 4 years as a monk, and it's interesting when I was reading through your bio some, that you found BDSM first, and then you began exploring meditation and Buddhism and being a monk. And
actually, the opposite.
Oh, okay. Tell me more. Now,
yeah, I started meditating 25 years ago. I think I had the seeds of being a nasty, kinky person in me, but I was kind of maybe over-socialized by my mom to be ashamed of them and a little scared of them. And I would actually say it's my exploration of Buddhist meditation and getting in touch with authentic truth within me and sort of giving it space that gave me space to let some of my kinky desires out. And I have to say, it was years before I found a community. I was just sort of flying blind, just trusting my own intuitions. And yeah, I think that my path in meditation and as a monk and learning more and more to delve into my own intuitive truth helped those desires to come out.
Ooh.
I got all kinds of interesting directions to go here. Let me start off. This may not be directly on topic, but it is of interest to me. You are not the only person I know that used to be a monk and now has a FetLife account. And part of me wonders, how do you go from, I mean, I visualize that being a monk is a life path.
Not the case,
obviously.
Well, I guess it depends on the culture. I think, you know, 100 years ago in Japan, your parents would never speak to you again if you were a monk and defrocked. And, you know, I guess Yeah, I guess there's some Asian cultures where that's still true. Maybe Burma, I don't know. But in modern America, I don't think that, speaking bluntly, white people become monks and sort of stay in it for life. I have friends that have, but no, that's not my way. I sort of dip in when my life gets a little crazy and then get out of there as soon as possible. I mean, who wants to sleep 6 hours a night and, work chopping wood in the cold rain and eat whatever they feed you and et cetera. It's not a lifestyle I would choose, but it definitely serves a purpose in terms of calming my consciousness and clarifying. I think the longest I was ever a monk in one go was a year.
Okay.
For coming back to secular life.
Okay.
I want to say something, which is, there's lineages in America where people can do long-term retreats where things are pretty, I don't know how to put it, welcoming and friendly, like an easy bed and plenty of walking meditation to counterbalance the sitting meditation so that people can stretch out their lower body joints and yummy food. But some of the retreats that I've done and the monasteries that I've lived in long term are more in the Zen lineage. And Zen's its own thing where there's a lot of discipline. I've been in some monasteries where you sit absolutely still without moving for 40 minutes. And if you move, they yell at you and or hit you with a stick. Where there's a whole notion of service to the master and behaving perfectly so as to be pleasing to the master, conquering the ego, learning to be humble, developing loving devotion, a notion of letting go of control, being perfect in other people's eyes, not resisting pain and other experiences, obeying without backtalk. So, I identify as a top, but sometimes people say to me, like, well, haven't you ever bottomed? I'm like, yeah, when I was in the monastery. Thank you very much.
I was going to say, I couldn't tell if you were describing Zen or being a slave.
Yeah, exactly.
Some similar concepts.
Again, so, when people say tops should bottom, I'm like, I've put in my time, believe me.
Now, let me ask your opinion on this. And as our listeners would know at this point, I do consider myself a Buddhist. Dawn considers herself certainly Buddhist. What is it? How you say it?
I say a Buddhist-flavored pagan priestess Kadishtu.
And when we go out with, by the way, if you ever go out on Easter as a Buddhist pagan, along with your Christian and atheist friends on Easter, it's a fun date. But that's besides the point.
We've done that.
We have done that. Do you consider yourself a Buddhist currently? Before I go too deep down that path.
In Buddhism, there isn't something like accepting Jesus as your Lord and Savior or Muhammad as the sole prophet of Allah. I think, there is taking refuge, which I've done. So I resisted for a long time calling myself a Buddhist, despite that was what my parents told their friends. But at this point, yeah, having taught it for 12 years, I think for simplicity's sake, I've drunk the Kool-Aid. So,
okay,
yeah.
Fair enough. So is there no teachings in that religion against BDSM, against kinky sex?
It depends who you ask. I think in America, a lot of Buddhists are sort of refugees from religion. Their parents, Catholicism or, Baptist fundamentalism or Judaism was constricting to them. So a lot of people find a certain freedom in Buddhism. I think in Asia, though, it is the authority. It is the old school. It is what your parents believed. So I think there are eminent teachers in Asia who, like a hardcore Christian minister in America would say, the purpose of sex is not pleasure. The only valid purpose of sex is procreation. So I think a lot of those teachers might say so. But I also think that there are teachers I would consider enlightened or eminent in the tradition who would have no problem with it. I mean, like I said in my little description of Buddhist monasteries, or at least the Zen monasteries I've lived in, there's a long tradition in Buddhism of using pain as a tool to open. The sort of simplest example is the kyosaku in Zen monasteries, which is a flat stick like a paddle or like a cricket bat that if people are falling asleep or even if the meditation hall monitor thinks that a person just isn't paying attention, they'll hit them on the shoulders with it. But, I think the idea with long sitting periods is that a meditator, is expected, if feeling hip pain, back pain, knee pain, to just sit with it and open to the ways of sensation without resisting them. And I think that there's an extreme example. You know, I live in the Bay Area, is the founder of the San Francisco Zen Center, Shinrao Suzuki Roshi, who's kind of a famous figure in Bay Area Zen. When he was first a young Zen monk at about age 12, his first initiation, it's something called Tongaryo in Zen. It was sort of, translated in the movie Fight Club, is that the guys who wanted to join the Fight Club had to sit on the porch for a week. Well, traditionally in Zen monasteries, the initiates had to sit absolutely still for a week. I think they were able to sleep a few hours a night to show their sincere desire to join the Zen monastery. Well, what they would do with these 12 or 13 year old boys is they would tie them in place so that they couldn't really move. And the idea was, no matter how much they hurt, they were expected to ride the waves of pain. They were expected to not resist it and fully experience it. So, you know, that's one example of many of the way that the Buddhist tradition and the meditative tradition from Asia uses pain as a way of creating some sort of sense of spiritual opening and some sort of sense of transcendence.
And that's one of the things that you teach about in your BDSM meditation class, and about how you can use the sensation of pain and letting it flow smoothly with no resistance. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, you know, some of my teachers talk about what we usually call pain is more like what technically in Buddhism would be called suffering. And suffering is the natural physical sensation of pain times our resistance. You know, in Buddhism, there's different ways of talking about the impurities of mind, but one of the impurities of mind is resistance or aversion. You know, you get in the cold shower and you shiver and you fight against it, or there's someone to go have a difficult conversation with and you don't want to have it. Or in a meditative period, your knees hurt, your hips hurt, and sort of tightening up against it and not wanting to feel it. What was the question again? I'm sort of getting off into my Buddhist trip here.
No, I totally dig that. And Dawn reminded me, hey, can we talk more about the topic than your Buddhist stuff?
So
the idea that pain, allowing the sensation of pain to flow smoothly with no resistance.
Absolutely. So here's a quote by a Sufi teacher, Ali Hamid Almas. All we need to do is quit struggling with ourselves and reality. When it is said that suffering ceases that when one is realized or enlightened, what is meant is that struggling ceases. Enlightenment is not a matter of not feeling pain, but of not fighting it. And here's a Buddhist teacher. Opening to pain is the practice of dropping the conscious resistance by letting go of judging thoughts and continuously relaxing your whole body as much as possible. That's what you find with beginning bottoms. They have judging thoughts like, is this feminist? Is this, what would my parents think? Is this okay? Am I letting myself be used? So, you know, the idea in Buddhist practice and meditative practice is to let go of those judging thoughts and just experience the pain as a pain. And then there's a bliss that comes from that. Here's William Henkin and Sybil Holliday, who I'm sure you guys have heard of from their book, Consensual Sadomasochism. Much of the art of SM bottoming lies in learning to surrender to sensation itself, undefining it as something unpleasant that one should try and escape from, and redefining it as an escalation of tactile energy entering one's sensorium that one might rather embrace than reject, that one might embrace increasingly intense sounds, colors, tastes, smells, or emotions. I don't find any difference between those three quotes. They're saying the same thing. And again, two of them are SM luminaries and two of them are spiritual teachers. So for me, there's no boundary.
And one of the things that I find, and one of the words that you used was bliss. And I just happened to randomly write that down because I have a hard time when I say I can't put this into words. I have a hard time because being a bottom and liking pain and being able to open up to pain and experiencing it brings me bliss. And yeah. I try to tell people that that is my spiritual connection.
Yeah.
And it's just very hard to explain. So I'm hoping those quotes, you know, speak to people because, like I said, I just have a hard time. Without experiencing it, I don't know that people actually understand that sensation of being with the pain and letting it crash through the walls of resistance.
Absolutely. You know, there's in many cultures, meditation is closely associated with voluntarily exposing oneself to discomfort or deprivation. You know, there's the Indian fakirs lying down on beds of nails. There's the Sioux Indians with their sun dancing, you know, being hung from hooks for 4 days straight. There's the medieval Catholics with self-flagellation. I think some schools of Islam still do that. There's the medieval Catholics wearing hair shirts. There's Japanese Buddhists and Shinto that would meditate under freezing cold waterfalls. So, I mean, what is that? To the normal Western mind, that just seems crazy. That just seems superstitious. But in each case, it's a religious practitioner intentionally seeking out pain as a tool of purification. And I think BDSM bottoms are a modern way to touch into that same experience. As you say, Dawn, people that are not part of the scene might say, well, why would you do that? What's happening there? And you know, if they haven't experienced the bliss, they might not understand. But I think it's something a lot of traditional people that were seeking some sort of sense of transcendence would absolutely understand.
Mm-hmm. And I actually use it for two things, believe it or not. And one, well, I'm sure it's believable, but uh-huh. I'm a Gemini. But one of the things is the transcendence, like you yeah. said. I absolutely love the journeying, the transcendence. Yeah. But I also have the other piece, which you would think would conflict and doesn't, which is being in the present moment. When a single tail strikes you, it's either transcendent or you are totally in the moment because a single tail just struck your ass.
Yeah, right. So. Absolutely. I remember I read an interview in Esquire magazine once with an NFL lineman or linebacker, and he's talking about how a lot of people in the NFL use meth to get through games. And someone said, well, do you do that? And he said, no, I use my meditation practice. And the interviewer said, well, what does that mean? He said, I get absolutely hollow to the experience. You know, by getting completely not resisting the experience and being completely right there with it, the pain didn't hurt. But, you know, if your mind wanders, the pain hurts. The pain becomes suffering. But by just experiencing it as waves of energy, there's sort of some sort of, you know, bliss, transcendence, opening. I mean, all the bottoms listening to this know exactly what I'm talking about. And all the meditators listening to this know exactly what I'm talking about.
I agree. Yep. So
you use the word purification a couple of times. What does that mean?
Well, I you know, in Buddhism, there's different ways of talking about impurities of mind. And maybe this is something that some of your listeners, it's a paradigm that they won't agree with. It reminds them of, you know, the Catholic priest talking about sin or something, but it's a paradigm that works for me. I think sometimes at the end of a day of office work, which I've done in my life, my mind is kind of busy. It's kind of grabbing after things. It's pushing other things away. And I'm just sort of like spinning. And that would be a state we could say in Buddhism of a lot of impurities of mind. A lot of, you know, you probably have friends that are just weird, and you can look back to childhood abuse that just sort of knocked things in their psyche a little askew. Well, I think what we're looking for in BDSM practice and what we're looking for in spiritual practice is some sort of sense of wholeness, some sort of sense of integration, some sort of sense of healing, some sort of sense of opening what is in us that is walled off in the psyche and welcoming it into the family, some sort of sense of peace, some sort of sense of serenity. And after a good scene or after a good sit, that's what we feel. So I think, you know, one paradigm of looking at what happens is working out impurities of mind that we've collected over a lifetime of being spaced out, or, you know, experiences we haven't fully felt through while they're happening, things like that.
Okay, that makes sense.
Well, as a meditator and as an abuse survivor, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Both are modalities of healing.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you think that there needs to be a relationship between sex and spirituality? Should they be two separate things?
You know, they are in our culture. You know, that much is, you know, I don't have to tell anyone that, living in Western culture, that they're often seen as oppositional. But I think that we could say that, I think most people listening to this, and you two as people who have explored both thoroughly, understand that they're the two deepest poles of our existence. I mean, we're made out of meat, right? We're made out of a penis ejaculating inside a vagina at some point. We're made out of sex. And at the same time, we are pure vibrating spirit. Those are kind of two deep truths of our existence. I remember I listened to a psychologist once talk about he found when a lot of people came to him with sexual crises, they're like, my sex life, blah, 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 or I'm not ejaculating right, or, you know, my partner and I this. He often find that some sort of sense of larger spirituality was really what opened them up. And he found when people came to them with religious crises, you know, I've lost a sense of God. I'm trying to find some sort of larger sense of spirit. He often found that, you know, getting a little nastier with their sex life was what really opened them up. And people often, you know, they're looking under the wrong stone for what really is missing in them. You know, one other thing I want to say about that is, Yeah, I forget.
You remind me, that just so happens to us all the time.
Fair enough. Okay.
Go ahead. But
I guess, you know, both of them, as I said before, they're dissolution of the rigid boundaries of self, where our body, mind, and soul merge into something bigger, both sex and spirituality. I mean, you know, like they say, people say, oh, God, when they orgasm off. And there's, you know, I've heard some spiritual teachers say the moment of orgasm is the moment of transcendence that some people, unless they have intentional spiritual practices, that's a moment of merging and of losing the self that most people can most relate to. So I think there is something very intertwined about it. I had a professor of religion in college, and he talked about there's transcendent religions where you're trying to get out of the mess of the world and merge back into the one. You know, that would be most monotheistic religions. And that, you know, in those religions, sex is a trap, something we get caught into. That, you know, you put a woman in a burqa so that she doesn't seduce you, and you only have sex for procreation. And there's definitely the lineages of Buddhism that are this way as well. He called these transcendent religions. And then there's immanent religions. And, you know, there's nothing outside of this world. There's no spiritual source. There's no oneness. All there is the joy of dancing in this world, sexual pleasure and making money and, you know, the Marxist revolution and the Tao. There's schools of philosophical and religious practice that just talk about just this world. You know, Marx himself said that the idea that there's something beyond this world is a trap. But he talked to my professor said the most mature spiritual practice has a balance of the two. It doesn't neglect either for the other. You know, we do live in this world and we are just the finite animals that we are. And sex is a big part of that. Sex is a big part of how we communicate with our fellow beings. Sex is a big part of our identities. Sex is a big part of our bliss in this life. At the same time, there is something, you know, we do come from a spiritual source. There is some sort of oneness that is the backdrop of everything. And I like to think in terms of a tree. A tree has its roots growing down into the moist soil, and it's also got leaves growing up and branches growing up towards the one sun. And so it's got, you know, this nasty, moist, dark, shit-kicking sexuality, we could say, for a person, at the same time, some sort of sense of purity, some sort of sense of larger merging, some sort of sense of deeper connection that comes from spiritual practice. And I don't think we need to choose in the end. I think both of those are us. And for me, a mature person is someone who's really in touch with both. I mean, you've probably met people that are a little addicted to sex. It's like they're one source of meaning. And you've also met holy rollers who, you know, you're just kind of like, it's just, you can't wait to get away from them. And some of your favorite people are probably people who have a sense of meaning. They have a sense of serenity. They have a sense of larger connection, and they're fun. They're sexy. They, you know, aren't afraid to show the trickster side. They aren't afraid to tell you what the fuck they want sexually. So yeah, I think the most alive people don't choose.
I'm very alive.
Cool. You are.
I'm alive.
You guys seem like you are. Yes, indeed.
We do our best. Ian, one more question for you, if you don't mind.
Yes, sir.
I see that you do a variety of lecture topics. You do some traveling. You do some presenting. Where can I find out more about your BDSM and meditation classes and about yourself?
Love to answer that. May I talk about one more thing before I answer that, if we have time, about topping and meditation?
Oh, absolutely.
You know, when I teach a lot of meditation, I have an 8-week class and I do one-on-one consultations. And a big part of what I teach is the idea in meditation of riding waves of energy. When a person is doing breath meditation, riding the waves of exactly how their breath feels. When doing body meditation, you know, whether there's pain or pleasure in the body, tuning into the wave-like nature of body sensations. Sound is another sensory gate that can relatively easily by many people be heard as vibrations of energy. And for me, that's the essence of topping. You know, I think beginner tops are, you know, when I started, there was kind of like, I'll show this person who's boss and I will, you know, it's kind of an ego trip at times. But I found, you know, that never works in topping. I'm sure you guys know this. I think topping ideally is riding the waves of energy of the bottom and kind of tuning into, like a good massage, what actually opens their body and soul and what actually closes it, and having sort of what we would call in Buddhist meditation, a one-pointed awareness of both the top's body and the bottom's body in the present moment, the mind not wandering, paying close attention to each whip strike. So that to me, I mean, I could say more about that, but that to me is in a nutshell, the connection between topping and Buddhist meditation is that sense of presence and that sense of riding deeper and deeper into waves of opening, so that, you know, the bottom experiences bliss and the top experiences bliss. Again, analogously to a good meditation session.
And that's certainly true for me. And I found that one of the challenges I have to playing is I have to be able to connect with them at that energetic level to enjoy playing. And I know a lot of people that play purely from a physical perspective. And for me, a bottom that is not able, that I can't connect to through my own inability to connect to them energetically, it's just not fun to play with.
No. Absolutely. You like absolutely.
You like the dance, the energetic dance. So,
So now you've that you've said. Got, yes.
So you've said.
Now that you've got us all hot and bothered.
I know.
Where do I find out more about Ian Snow?
Okay, you can go to my website, which is freedomandconstraint.com, freedomandconstraint.com, freedomandconstraint.com. Freedom and constraint is all one word. You can subscribe to my announcements list. I mostly teach in the Bay Area, so if you're in Northern California, that would be a great checkoff for you. There's an email address there on my website as well. info@freedomandconstraint.com. I do Skype trainings if people are interested in meditation training, relating that to their kinky life or just straight up meditation training. Feel free to reach out.
Fantastic. And I would recommend people go check out your website. If nothing else, one of my favorite pictures of the Buddha is currently on that site.
Indeed, it's a wonderful picture. Yeah.
Ian, it's been a pleasure to talk to you tonight. And we hope that in our next meditative trance, you show up and spank the crap out of Dom.
Awesome.
You guys are great. It's been a pleasure to be here. I love your podcast. Thank you for interviewing.
Thanks. You. Erotic Awakening is sponsored in part by Guilty Pleasure State Show and its educational branch, the Monkey Puzzle Club.
Join us the third Friday of each month for Fetish Foreplay Friday at Club Princeton in Columbus, Ohio. Classes begin at 8 p.m. with party immediately following.
You can also catch the Guilty Pleasure State Show at Porter's Pub in Columbus, Ohio, the fourth Friday of each month.
The Monkey Puzzle Club meets every Wednesday at 8 p.m. at The Room at the Columbus Insight Center.
Follow us on Twitter at MonkeyPuzzleOH. You can also follow both Guilty Pleasures and Monkey Puzzle Club on FetLife.com for all announcements and discussions.
Bye, Dan.
Bye, Dawn.
Bye, Rawr. Ginger.
Ginger, come here.
Silly pup.